Cold mornings, frosty windows. Yep, it's that time of year. So treat yourself and start your day with a cup of fresh roasted Sterling Roastery coffee, sourced from around the world and roasted multiple times a week for unbeatable freshness. It's the kind of warm-up every sports fan deserves this holiday season. And right now, you can win one of three $50 Sterling gift cards, perfect for gifting or building your own winning lineup of Java in the morning. Enter today at sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways so you can wake up, warm up, and Sterling up this holiday season. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways.
125 defining moments, one legendary league. This is Darren Hayes of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, and a great book is out right now, NFL Moments, 125 Icons and Stories That Define the NFL. It's a definitive visual history of the National Football League, packed with iconic images and untold stories behind the game's biggest plays and its greatest players. From the early legends like Red Grange to today's stars like Patrick Mahomes, this book is a touchdown for fans who crave more than just stories. So give your football bookshelf a Hall of Fame upgrade or snag a holiday gift for that NFL history buff on your shopping list. Pick up NFL Moments, available now at your favorite bookseller.
Hi, this is Mark Trestman, former head coach and adjunct professor at the University of Miami School of Law. And you're listening to the official Football Learning Academy podcast on the Sports History Network.
Welcome to the official Football Learning Academy podcast. I'm your host, Ken Crippen, and I'm the founder and lead instructor at the Football Learning Academy, an online school teaching pro football history. To learn more about the Football Learning Academy, go to our website at www.football-learning-academy.com. Not only will you find links to our social media channels and a listing of all podcast episodes, but you'll find other fascinating interviews and classes. And an important note, portion of all proceeds generated at the Football Learning Academy go to help retired players in need. That website again is www.football-learning-academy.com. Today we focus on Ralph Hay, the person responsible for organizing the league that is now the NFL. Later we'll sit down with Pro Football Hall of Fame selector and member of the Hall of Fame's Blue Ribbon Committee for Contributors, Clark Judge, to talk about Ralph Hay. To learn more about trailblazing contributors in NFL history, visit our Historical Scouting Reports class where we discuss the greats in NFL history. Check it out at the Football Learning Academy website at www.football-learning-academy.com. Now let's get to our profile of Ralph Hay. When looking at the contributor category for the Hall of Fame, you want to focus on someone who's made a lasting contribution to professional football. Well, how does organizing a professional football league that lasted for over 100 years? The NFL of today would not exist if it were not for Ralph Hay. Some try to make the argument that, well, somebody else would have done it if Ralph Hay did not. Well, many other people tried and failed, both before and after the formation of what is now the NFL. Just off the top of my head, there was the 1902 NFL. In 1917, there were two attempts to form leagues in Indiana and Detroit. Both never got off the ground. You had the 1926 AFL that only lasted 1 year. There were multiple AFLs in the 1930s and 1940s that failed. There was the Trans-America League, the original United States Football League in the 1940s. And that doesn't include the All-America Football Conference, multiple European leagues, the XFL, etc. Some had notable people behind them with a lot of money. None had any lasting impact and ultimately failed. Not Ralph Hay's league. It's still growing today and is arguably the most popular sport in the country. Ralph Hay was also a championship team owner. His Canton Bulldogs won the championship in 1922, going undefeated 10-0-2, with seven shutouts and outscoring their opponents 184-15. They also had two additional shutouts and 0-0 ties to have a total of 9 of their 12 games where their opponents did not score points. There were three Hall of Famers on that roster, Guy Chamberlain, Pete Henry, and Link Lyman. Norb Sackstetter was also on that roster, and he deserves to be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, but that's for another time. Finally, the Pro Football Hall of Fame has the Ralph Hay Pioneer Award, given to those who have made significant and innovative contributions to professional football. I would say that organizing the league that has lasted over 100 years and is a multi-billion dollar industry qualifies as a significant contribution, but for some reason, the voters did not agree. Now that you have background information on Ralph Hay, I thought I would bring in Pro Football Hall of Fame selector and someone who serves with me on the Hall of Fame's Blue Ribbon Committee for Contributors, Clark Judge, for his thoughts on Ralph Hay. Clark is the person who presented Hay's case to the Blue Ribbon Committee for Contributors, which made Hay a finalist. He also presented him to the main committee. Here is Clark Judge.
I was privileged enough to be able to hear your impassioned presentation for Ralph Hay and the Blue Ribbon Committee for the Hall of Fame. So for our listeners, why should Ralph Hay be inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame?
He founded the league. He was a founder. You don't have a league without the founder. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can laugh about it now, Ken. You were in that room. It's just preposterous to me to think the man who's identified as a founder in downtown Canton is not in the Hall of Fame, which is in Canton because of him. And there's signs downtown identifying Ralph Hay as founder. There's a huge mural on the side of a two-story building with Ralph Hay and Jim Thorpe. Huge figures painted on the side. NFL founders. There's a practice each summer before the Pro Football Hall of Fame game. It's in downtown Canton. It starts in the afternoon before the game that evening, where kids line up for 3 miles from downtown to the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and they pass a football to each other to the gates of the Hall of Fame, to the door of the Hall of Fame. It's not so important where it ends up. It's where it starts. It starts at the site of Ralph Hay's Hupmobile dealership. Why do you think that's the case? Mm-hmm. Because it all started there. Oh, yeah, you're right. I was impassioned. It's taken a long time for me to get over this, but you know, maybe one day I hope that one day somebody can get him in. I would like to be that guy, but I don't understand it. And I wish somebody would tell me why, because there's not a major sports Hall of Fame in this country, or I'd say Canada, that doesn't have its founder in, except for one. And we're talking about it.
Yeah, and you look at it too, he wasn't just a founder, he was the organizer. He's the one who got all the other founders together to put this, you know, put this in place. And you know, you've heard things in the past of, you know, anybody could do it and stuff. And to me, other people have tried to put it together. They failed.
Right.
So you got something that's lasted over 100 years. This is the guy that organized it. How can he not be in the Hall of Fame? I mean, yeah, you can look at some of the other founders, you know, the Carl Storks and, you know, some other people that, you know, are never going to get inducted. But the guy that brought everyone together and made it happen can't get a sniff at the Hall of Fame.
I was in touch with his grandson, 70-year-old grandson, while I was putting this thing together. And he said, you know, people think all he did was own that team. And he said he didn't. He promoted the sport. And besides the fact that he thought beyond a four-team Illinois league, you know, before he thought of beyond that or a four-team league, he looked at a regional and national concept, more of a regional concept. And he said, you know, the thing that's really significant here is that he promoted it. He was talking about a game in New York where they were playing. Canton, I think, was going to play. Somebody was going to play there. And they expected 1,000. He said, my grandfather promoted. They had 10,000 people there. And that was a huge deal. And so they just think he owned a team. Well, I said, yeah, he owned a team for 5 years, 4 years in which they played. Two of those 4 years, they won championships. The fifth year after he sold it, they won a championship. So three of those 5 years, first 5 years, they won league titles. So just basically on the face of ownership, you go, this is an owner who actually was significant because he had the players. He had five Hall of Famers on that team, as you know, and who could have been in the Hall based on his ownership. But someone said to me, he wasn't around, this was during the meeting, wasn't around long enough to me to make a difference. And he said, yeah, you know, all he did was he had a meeting. Why is that so significant? And I said, because it's the most important meeting in the history of the NFL. That's it. That's it. That was it. When I said four team, I don't know, it's four team Illinois, Ohio League, whatever. I'm trying to think, but think back. But he had, there was a state league basically with four teams in it, and then he went beyond that. But he had a vision, and that vision became the National Football League. And he could have been the president, or I would think what they might call today a commissioner. Except he said, "My name's not going to sell. Jim Thorpe's would. We're going to make Jim Thorpe the." I'm telling you everything you know anyway, but. And so let's put Jim Thorpe in there. Of course, he was the wrong guy for that in terms of what he could do for the job. But he was the right guy in terms of visibility. They knew that name, and he knew Jim Thorpe had cachet. That name had cachet. So I don't understand it. I fought it for a while, but I will fight it when it comes up again. I don't know that his name can ever come up again, to be honest with you. I mean, someone said, oh, you can bring him back next year. I went, why would we bring him back next year? And he can't do that. I'm also one of those who thinks you shouldn't bring a guy back next year. He should make room for somebody else now. He had his chance. But I just find it hard to believe that the guy who was a founder of the NFL is not in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And somebody said during the conversation, Sterling Sharpe's the most bulletproof candidate here. I said, no, he's not. He didn't found the league. You mm-hmm. want to put in a player, you want to put in a founder. I mean, but that's how I feel. You touched a very sensitive spot for me because I did present him. You were part of it. You also spoke out in favor of him, and thank you for it. But those who know he was more than a Hupmobile salesman who put his place as the site of a meeting. He did more than that. As I said, he had a vision. George Halas, as you may know, wrote him in that summer of 1920 and said, this is what I think we should do. And in his autobiography, he said, Ralph Hay was way ahead of me. He'd already contacted other teams. He was way ahead of me. So he invited me to Canton. We go there. And that is the genesis of the National Football League. So why should it be in? Very simple. He helped found the league. So I don't know why he's not in.
Yeah. And as you mentioned, you know, championship owner of a team. So you look at that championship team in 1922, outscored their opponents 184-15. Nine of their games, nobody scored on them. So right. 0 points scored on them in nine of their 12 games. You got Hall of Famers on that roster, Guy Chamberlain, Pete Henry, Lynn Kleiman, Norb Sackstetter, he should be in the Hall of Fame. But, you know, you look at all of this stuff that he's done organizing it, and then you add that he's a championship owner. Again, to me, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, and somebody had said in a ESPN story back in November that was leaked after we had our meeting about who the finalist was going to be, and Ralph Hay was the guy, and it was obviously a frustrated Robert Kraft supporter who went public with this anonymously, but and said he didn't even pay his players and we're putting him in. No one knows who he is. No one knows who Ralph Hay is except for historians. And so somebody asked me why Hurdy didn't pay his players. Is that true? And I said, no, it's not. He paid Jim Thorpe $2,500. I'm trying to think if it was per game or whatever it was. It was an enormous sum anyway. It was $2,500 a season. And also he gave him 15% of the profits, but there were no profits. So he actually struck a deal with him to get money there. And I said, the reason he had to sell the Hupmobile dealership because he was paying his players and they were losing money. And then at that point, Joe Horgan actually stepped in and said, he's right. I mean, I know this. People were losing their shirts in the beginning and they had to sell left and right. Ralph Hay actually stuck it out until the 1923 and then had to sell, but did everything he could to keep that team afloat. He had stars galore. Now, he did not sign Thorpe. He was there when he got there, but he did everything he could to keep that team together. And as you said, to make it, I think what in George Halas's autobiography, he called it one of the best, if not the best run franchise. And so players were happy. Thorpe, in a 1972 article in The Plain Dealer that I quoted, said, I couldn't have been happier anyplace else. He took care of us. He did the right things. He did everything right. But it didn't make any difference. It just fell on deaf ears. And as I said, if you just cut this thing down to he founded the league, and as you said, he was such a successful owner. Look, three of the first 5 years, Canton Bulldogs won league championships. End of story. That's very simple. Can we now just move forward? And we couldn't. And that's discouraging.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't make sense to me. He was winning championships before he got to the NFL. He was winning championships in the NFL. So, you know, like you said, championship team. And on top of that, the most important part of it, he organized everything. So, yeah, you can give credit to Halas, you can give credit to Thorpe, you can give credit to other people as founders, but there is only one organizer of the league, and that's Ralph Hay.
Yeah, and as I said, you know, all those sites downtown, they have a Ralph Hay Way down there in downtown Canton, point in that direction. And for a class of four members, which is somewhat underwhelming to fans, I think, honestly, when they were used to like seven, eight, whatever. Think, and since 2005, we've had eight except for 1 year, and I'm accepting the centennial year, for that's a different year. But we've had eight except for 1 year. That was 2007 when Tagliabue was voted down. But 2005, we had four. But the two modern era guys were Steve Young and Dan Marino. That's a pretty good class right there. But we've got three modern era and one senior. And I thought, God, if you would have Ralph Hay in there, Kent would have gone crazy. They would have had a week-long party. It would have been great. And you're not putting him in there for that reason. You're not. But just think of what it could have meant. He belongs there. We all know it. So do it now, because you'll have the party of the century in Ken Canton. But it fell on deaf ears. So we move forward without Ralph Hay.
Thank you for listening to our profile of Ralph Hay and our interview with Pro Football Hall of Fame selector Clark Judge. To learn more about the Football Learning Academy, go to our website at www.football-learning-academy.com. Not only will you find links to our social media channels and a listing of all podcast episodes, but you'll find other fascinating interviews and classes. And an important note, a portion of all proceeds generated at the Football Learning Academy go to help retired players in need. That website again is www.football-learning-academy.com. Thank you for listening.
You did not see their faces on the Wheaties boxes, nor did they have the headlines, but they were breaking barriers, one pitch at a time. The integration of minor league baseball, a history and player register, 1946 to 1959, by Rick Swain and Gary C. Fink, shines a light on the overlooked heroes who paved the way for future legends. From dusty bus rides to hostile crowds, these players fought for a place in a game that did not want to see them win. More than history, it's a tribute to courage, perseverance, and the power of a game to change. Honor their legacy today and grab a copy of The Integration of Minor League Baseball at your favorite bookseller.